All right, welcome to the iLife.com weekly podcast. I'm Sydney San Martin. I'm here with two guests this time. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
Well, I'm Matt Dodd, and I'm normally around here, but we've got a special guest, Sam Epstein. Sam?
Hi, I'm Sam Epstein. I'm kind of an editor. I kind of silently edit posts, you know, like half of them.
Yeah, Sam's responsible for a lot of editing work that gets done on the iLife, but he doesn't really get too much credit. But now you can hear him. He does exist. And so, yeah.
Another thing, of course, that's notable about this show is that we are all in the same room. So we can have more open face-to-face banter than is usually possible.
Yeah, we can get that nice witty bat enter going.
Yeah, normally me and Sydney record from over the phone and over computers, and that's actually the reason we're doing this podcast again, is my hard drive decided to eat half of the other show.
Half of your side of the other show, I have to say my side is still intact, but
right.
I'll let that go.
I'm normally recording from my college dorm, and that explains not only the poor audio quality, but yeah.
The interruptions.
The interruptions and
college life.
Yeah, breaks and things like that happen, and so we decided to wait a day or two for me to physically be here, and then we picked up our editor, Sam, to join with this podcast. So anyways, this is episode 7.1, kind of, because an episode 7 got recorded and then was lost. So, tomorrow's Thanksgiving.
And that means that the day after it is Black Friday.
Right.
A day very, very well known in the technology industry.
Yep. And so we've got a bunch of things coming up for Black Friday. We're going to be going out. I don't know if you guys are coming with me, but I'm going with some people to get good deals on things for...
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. To go for the experience, to get new
the brick and mortar experience.
Exactly. I mean, there's tons of online stuff, and that's kind of okay, but doesn't really touch the big bunch of crowds waiting outside in the cold,
trampling and the fighting, and the
screaming dabbing. And all that kind of stuff. But anyways, so we'll definitely be doing some coverage from there and have lots of pictures and cool things to report back about that. Otherwise, the site has been kind of empty, and we do apologize for that, but there's all kinds of cool things being thrown around, and you're talking, I mean, you know, we've got some tutorials in the works and things like that. Sam can attest to that. He's the editor. So anyways, moving on to the Apple news.
Snow Leopard.
Yes.
Basically, there's a rumor going around, started by Jordan Hubbard. He's the director of engineering of Unix technologies at Apple, and interestingly enough, also on the MacPorts team. You may have used MacPorts if you had to install any Unix utilities on your computer. But anyway, at the large installation system administration conference in San Diego recently, he had a slide discussing the release dates of all of Apple's Mac OS X. Versions from 10.0 all the way up to the present, and going forward to Snow Leopard. And the release date on that slide for Snow Leopard is Q1 2009. So, don't know how accurate that is, but he seemed to just kind of slip it in there. So, it despite what we were talking about last week, right, the slow pace of builds and betas, there's a chance that we might be seeing Snow Leopard out in people's hands pretty soon.
Yeah. I believe the tentative release date was Q2 2009 that was set and when it was released in WWDC. But either way, it's definitely an interesting report, especially considering that there's only been one public build since the WWDC release. Normally you'd see a lot more activity in the builds this close to a release date, because I mean January or February or March is close in terms of developing an operating system. But Another story that relates to that one is about OpenCL and how the OpenCL protocol standard. It's a standard.
API? Right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's an API that's available.
It's also a programming language.
Yeah.
Obviously similar to OpenGL.
Yeah.
But instead of where OpenGL is meant for writing graphics, OpenCL is meant for utilizing graphics processors and utilizing multi-core systems and
parallel computing.
But to solve mathematical problems and computing problems.
Right, and it's one of the biggest features of 10.6 Snow Leopard. So it was actually recently ratified and is in the process of being reviewed by lawyers to make sure that no intellectual property has been breached. So within the next 30 days, theoretically, OpenCL should be a standard. And it was completed in less than 6 months, which is a quite notable release time frame, or not really time frame, but period of time for it to be released. I mean, normally larger standards can take up to 5 years or beyond that, or so it's definitely
fast.
Yeah, it is. We have to admit it's 4 o'clock in the morning here, which probably shouldn't have admitted. Let's say it's late at night, and this is a great time to record a podcast, but maybe they're better. Anyway.
Yeah, we apologize.
We're a little slow on the draw here. Anyway.
Anyways. Another story in Apple News this week is about iTunes going DRM-free. There's a story published by CNET, or an article, rather, that confirms, or CNET confirming that Apple's in ongoing negotiations with the major music studios to offer more DRM-free music in iTunes. There's some earlier rumblings about iTunes Plus and Sony BMG being added to the iTunes Plus. going DRM-free, I guess we should say. But this is a rumor that everyone, all the big four, is going DRM-free. And there was a number of... I don't know how one would classify this, but there's a number of breaches?
Leaks?
Leaks that... not really. I mean, in the iTunes store, there's a lot of tracks that were DRM'd, showing up as iTunes Plus.
Oh, nice.
Which have since been removed. I don't remember which ones that was, but that was about a day ago.
So accidental releases. Well, I mean, regardless, it looks like Apple has been moving toward making iTunes Plus indistinguishable from regular iTunes or from DRM'd iTunes Store songs for a while. I mean, at the beginning, it was really pushed by Steve Jobs, even personally, as a premium service. It would cost more, and it was only for people who wanted the highest quality music and the most freedom with their music. But, you know, obviously, since then, they've moved to making the only difference, as far as the users can see, between regular iTunes and iTunes Plus, that little icon
right
next to the track in the store. So it would be entirely seamless for them to move anything else in the library up to that level. And, I'm sure it's something that Apple would love to see, and something that we would all love to enjoy as well. So it's not very far-fetched at all.
It would definitely put a serious dent in all the competitors to iTunes, which, like, Amazon has DRM-free music that you can just download as an MP3. So although these would be AAC, we're assuming, it would definitely be a big plus for iTunes because they've got a huge catalog already, and it would just really put a serious blow to people like Amazon.
Now, one thing to note just quickly, iTunes still will watermark all their files with the account that they were purchased on, and they do now with iTunes Plus, that if you share a song with a friend, it's very easy to go into that AAC file and see that it was actually purchased by your friend, unlike some services like Amazon, which claims that they do not do any kind of watermarking or tracking. When you buy it, you get the MP3 file, and you get a license to use it. You know, you get the standard license to use that music as you would a CD, and not a huge difference, but maybe an attraction for some people.
Mm. Yeah. So anyways, that's definitely something to look forward to, and with the leaks, we don't really know what to define them as, showing up in iTunes, one might think that that might be around the corner, so definitely something to keep an eye out for. The Apple Cinema Displays, or what are they calling them now?
The LED Cinema Display? That's the Apple.com. Even we have to do this sometimes.
The Apple LED Cinema Display.
The new DisplayPort-based display that was released with the new MacBook and MacBook Pro.
They have shipped. And they have been received by some early customers. And
yes, that is the LED Cinema Display officially.
Right.
But go on.
Which is 24 inches versus the old 23, which has now been phased out.
Right.
With, of course, the built-in EyeSight mic, speakers, and the USB hub.
And MagSafe power adapter. And
the MagSafe, and, of course, the mini display port. Has shipped, and users are getting it. So if you bought one of them early on, you'll be getting one. Here, not many surprises, but kind of cool features. When you plug in the USB hub, the computer automatically detects the speakers and the EyeSight and the microphone and will switch all the inputs to the display by automatically. So
very nice.
All the audio will be routed to the display if you just normally have the speakers, but like if you plugged in your headphones, then it would take it away from the display and your laptop and just go to the headphones. So cool. Basically
no complaints, no major bugs yet.
Nothing other than the fact that they're very glossy, and I'm not a huge fan of glossy displays, but
yeah.
In the realm of mini display, segueing into our next story, the DisplayPort Max, such as the MacBook Air, the MacBook, and the MacBook Pro, support a protocol called HDCP, which stands for...
We went through this last time. Yeah.
Yes, it's not high definition, it's high...
High bandwidth digital content protection.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, basically, it limits, or theoretically can limit...
Well, you want me?
Yeah, Cindy, you can take it if you...
It lets the creators of any DRM'd media set restrictions. This is a simplified version. Set restrictions on how that can be used. And most importantly, it allows the content creators to restrict output of that content to only HDCP-compliant devices, which means that that video will only be able to be sent at full resolution or at all to devices that have signed a bunch of legal documents saying that they won't allow you to capture the video coming out of that device. So the idea is you buy a movie from the iTunes store, and then you connect your HDCP approved, you know, licensed display, and the video can only be sent then to that display.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely no way you're going to be able to record it or screen capture it or whatever, or frame grab it at any point. The problem is that these days, very few displays have HDCP, and when you get below the digital level, like VGA, it's not supported at all.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that became a problem with the new MacBooks. I don't know if either of you want to elaborate on that.
Right. Basically, the issue was that the new MacBooks would not allow output into anything that wasn't HDCP compliant. So it's, say you had a new MacBook and you hooked up the adapter to VGA and plugged it into a projector and would like to play a movie from iTunes, and it would come up with a little error message that said, like, this display is not supported or something ridiculous like that, and you could just click OK, and that was it. Basically, it was actually a bug. Normally, what HDCP compliant Ports.
Devices. Normal implementation of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Normal implementation is that if you had an HD movie, let's say, and you wanted to play it back onto a projector in the configuration I just mentioned, it would downconvert it to standard definition and play it back. So you would not get the full resolution, but it would still play. What was different about this is that it would not play at all. So that was something that's really just
annoying.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, why? But
and it wasn't necessarily a bug. I mean, it was just their initial implementation of it.
Yeah, probably I don't think it's a content
creator saying, hey, well, someone had to write the error messages and everything.
That's true.
So sounds like someone said, hey, you know, these new Macs support HTTP. We need to implement it. We need to make content providers happy. So they just did it without probably being able to come up with a better way of doing it.
Right. But either way.
Yeah. And one important thing to note, this was not affecting anything you play on iTunes. It was only certain things purchased from the iTunes store. Certain
right. movies. Yeah, I said shows. iTunes because figured, you know, we bought an HD movie off of iTunes store. But yes, you're right. Anyways, on Tuesday, Apple released QuickTime 7.5.7, which allowed the SD iTunes playback over DisplayPort. So that issue has since been resolved, I guess. But still, either way, boo for DRM and HDCP. On a side note, though, the Apple TV and August 2007 iMacs have all supported HDCP. And like with the Apple TV, the HDMI port doesn't allow...
It won't allow the same kind of content.
Right. Something you can't like record something off of the output from the HDMI.
Yeah, it won't output to anything that's not HTTP compliant. Yeah. But it's important to know with the Apple TVs, there's a workaround. If you use the component outputs, there's no HTTP, and it doesn't complain. It just lets you do whatever you want. And that's been since the 2.0 update to Apple TVs.
Yep. Speaking of Apple TVs, Apple released a new update for the Apple TV, which brings it to version 2.3. Basically, music can be streamed via AirTunes to Airport Express speakers or other Apple TVs in your house. It's a cool feature. Also, Apple TV can now learn other remote controls and use them in addition to the Apple remote, such as, I believe, the Logitech Harmony is supported, or... that's just one that comes to mind. Playlists in iTunes can contain movies, TV shows, podcasts, and music videos will be seen on the Apple TV versus previously just music. And finally, the most notable feature is that there's support for volume control in music. So when you're playing music.
Which is kind of convenient to be able to change the volume while you're listening to music.
But anyways,
it's a minor update for the most part, but hey, I mean, it adds some features that I'm sure people have been bugging Apple about for a while, so always welcome.
Yep. On a side note though, what is it? Boxy has been updated for 2.3, so you can do all those completely legit activities on your Apple TV. But anyway, speaking of,
we want to tell anyone like what Boxy is, just to.
Yes.
It is still in a private beta, or is it private alpha? Private something. You're not going to be able to just go and download it just yet, but.
Do either of you? Whatever. It's basically like, I don't know if any of you guys have checked out, is it AppleTVHacks.net or something like that? Hack the AppleTV.net or something.
But it's like a media center.
Yeah, it's a site that lists a bunch of hacks for the Apple TV, and what differs Boxy from that is that it really converts the Apple TV into a true media center. You can watch like Hulu videos and do all kinds of cool stuff from your Apple TV. But anyways, in other software updates.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just opened up Boxy on my computer. It's a really cool interface, and it's pretty easy right now to install it on your Apple TV, and it just shows up as another menu option. But it's like this, a social network for media. so you can share what you're watching with your friends and what you're listening to, and keeps track of everything on Last.fm and on YouTube and whatever, and gives you recommendations, which is a really smooth interface, and new pictures, and it's pretty
nice. Yeah, it's kind of hard for you to see.
What
he's demoing right now.
But you guys can see it, right?
Yeah, it's very pretty. But
it looks exactly the same on the Apple TV.
Anyways, though, so in other Apple news, 2.2 was released last week, almost a week ago now.
And jailbroken just a couple of days later.
That'd be the iPhone firmware. Just
right.
Turn that up.
iPhone and iPod Touch. iPod
yes.
Touch?
Yes, okay. The iPod Touch too. Basically, the key features. Lots of new map features. However, it is interesting that the iPod Touches did not receive the maps updates because it's still on the account. It's on the subscription-based accounting track. Basically, Apple accounts for the sales of iPod Touches different than they do of iPhones. So that will often make certain updates paid to iPod Touch users versus iPhone users. So the iPod Touch users did not receive the new features of maps, which are the street view, the transit times, the walking times, addresses on drop pins, sharing a location, not your location.
Those are the major ones. But
I'm trying to think.
Street View. A lot of the implementations of these things are really cool, though.
Right.
If you have a chance to play with it, then absolutely do.
Yeah. Definitely something cool to check out. But other features that are supported on both platforms, the iPod Touch and the iPhone, is the over-the-air podcasts, some fixes for the App Store. There's a couple of security holes that they fixed. There's a nice switch that you can turn off the autocorrect feature. I don't know. That's about it, right?
Yeah.
Trying to summarize quickly here. But there are some bugs with the over-the-air podcast subscription. Like, it doesn't really regard what you're doing in iTunes.
Well, it doesn't have any contact at all with what you're doing on the iPod side. So, let's say you want to update one of the podcasts you have, you can hit Get More Episodes, and it drops you into the iTunes store and shows you all the episodes of that podcast, and you're kind of on your own from there. It will let you... It will not complain at all if you try to re-download episodes that you already have. I don't know if it's overwriting them or if they're just going off into a black hole, but I was able to just repeatedly go download the same episode and
just
neither end of the equation seemed to be aware of it. And there's no... It doesn't seem to be aware of subscriptions either, so there's no way to download all the new episodes of one podcast or to subscribe to a podcast and keep track of new episodes as they show up. So it will definitely not notify you when new episodes of anything comes out, for instance.
It seems to be strictly just a Get More Episodes button, which is exactly what it says. So, I mean,
But a cool thing about it that you discovered is playing and previewing podcasts in the iTunes store.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Basically, you can listen to or watch previews of a podcast streaming instead of downloading it. So I don't think we've tested this enough extensively, but I think you can essentially get around the 10 megabyte limit on over the air podcast versus over Wi-Fi. So there's a 10 megabyte cap on downloading new episodes if you're on 3G or Edge. But if you click on the episode and not click on the download link, you can stream it and just listen to it in the regular QuickTime player on the iPhone or iPod Touch.
An important thing to note is, I mean, you can really listen to full episodes like that, and you can scrub through episodes, and you can even, and this is what you discovered, you can exit out of the iTunes store app while a podcast is playing in the background and just keep using your iPhone, and it will continue streaming for you, which is amazing. You know, if you just want to try out new podcasts without having to download them. So something absolutely something to keep in mind. You cannot do that with video podcasts, but you can absolutely stream and watch video podcasts in the iTunes store as well as previews.
Yeah, just not in the background. But
right.
Anyways, cool stuff. I mean, it does have its bugs. There's a couple features that should be changed or improved in the future, but definitely liking the over-the-air podcast downloading. In general, I mean, it's much better to have it than not. And, I mean, for 2.2, that's about it. I haven't discovered any bugs yet, and I've been using it for just about a week now. I don't know, Sydney, you discovered anything? You're usually good at that.
Let's see. No, nothing in particular. There is a little cool feature that most people will not be able to access, unfortunately, without jailbroken iPhones, or iPod touches. They've added an emoji keyboard for Japanese users, and you can find some information if you just search for an emoji keyboard, but it gives you a palette of, I'm not sure exactly how many, it could be 100 or so little emoticons, but not just emoticons, everything from faces to arrows and signs and objects and pets. And the Japanese carriers, these can be used like instead of a text message. If you want to tell someone something, you can just send them a couple of icons instead. But the secret is, even though it's only enabled on the Japanese carriers, the emoji feature is included on all iPhones. So if you go in and enable it, which you may not be able to do, but on a standard iPhone, but it's possible, you can then suddenly get yourself access to this whole keyboard and use it to send emoji in SMSs and emails. This is a pretty random thing, but I tried it out and it's cool.
Yeah, so instead of typing something, you can just send it in pictographs.
Which could be really efficient, you know?
Yeah, except
dog, arrow, house.
Yeah, what does it look like to something that's not emoji?
It will probably just show up as broken Unicode. So numbers or letters or symbols.
So not too effective.
I actually did test it. I tried sending it to someone on AT&T, and it just the text message never got through.
But, anyways, a couple more Apple bits here. In the iPhone 2.2, some developers are noticing that the class MPTV out window, which sends video out through the dock connector to presumably an outside source, has been blocked, hidden.
Really?
It's sort of...
Things are becoming even less documented and less accessible rather than more?
Apparently, it was an unpublished part of the framework.
Is there an unpublished interface?
To begin with.
Okay.
But... In 2.2, it appears to be disabled. So, this is interesting, because it's... I don't know what the reasoning is behind this, or why it's undocumented, or...
Well, it's similar to... I mean, there are tons of undocumented things. It's similar to the case there's been a lot of talk about lately with Google's new voice search app that it accesses losing track of my syllables here.
The proximity sensor,
yeah, so yes. That it will only enter voice search mode when you have moved the phone up to your ear and it can detect a face next to the phone. And that is an undocumented feature. But yet somehow it managed to get into the App Store. And the logical progression of that, you'd think, would be for Apple to open it up and let people use it officially. But that may not be happening. We'll see.
Yeah, interesting development.
Well, they're Google. They're special.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, do they get special treatment, or does it just go unnoticed? But, I mean, that's one of the biggest features, so you think it's not enough. Whatever.
Anywho.
Yeah. Another random bit. The talks to bring Beatles to the iTunes store have apparently broken down, according to Mr. or Sir Paul McCartney.
For the what time? For 10th time or something?
This is one of those things that have been rolling on and off and on and off and on and off. And
Apple versus Apple.
Yeah, previously there's a court case that was settled not too long ago between Apple, now Inc., was then Computers, Inc., versus Apple Corps, which is the...
Corporation.
Regardless.
Yes, no S. I'm sorry. It's late. We apologize. Anyways, though, so according to McCartney, it is broken down. There's a lot of rumors about it coming out and there being Beatles artwork in Steve Jobs' keynotes, and...
Yeah, he probably just ripped those. But the conclusion is, no, that wasn't a hidden message to... Well, maybe it was a hidden message. That wasn't a hidden sign that they were bringing the Beatles to iTunes. It was just a hidden sign that Steve Jobs likes the Beatles. Yeah.
Yeah. So, they're stalled again. Hopefully we'll see them at some time in the future. But anyways, basically the last piece of Apple news I have for you, or we have for you, this week in a little timely fashion is about Apple's price matching policy, which is not well advertised.
It's going to be big when Black Friday comes around.
Right, exactly. Basically, the Apple stores don't want to be undersold on their own products. So Apple has always had this price matching policy, but it's not very well documented. So you could theoretically go up to a manager or sales associate and show a documented price from an authorized Apple reseller that is, if lower than the Apple store price, it will then be matched on the spot. So,
and that does include Black Friday. So
right.
When you bring in your documented cheap Apple computer sale prices,
such as from retailers such as Amazon.com, Best Buy, or Mac Mall, all of whom are Apple authorized resellers and have in the past offered Apple computers at lower prices than even Apple. So that's something to note if you're going to be buying a computer this holiday season, especially an Apple computer. That will do you a lot of good if you find a better deal somewhere else. So, for example, that won't work off of eBay, because eBay and eBay sellers are generally not Apple authorized resellers. So, yeah. That's about it for Apple news this week. I don't know. You don't have anything else that you do?
I do not. I'm low on. I've run out of Apple news.
And you're running out of steam, too.
Yeah, we are. Apologize for this late night recording, but wanted to get this out. Any cool stuff this week? Let's see. Sydney, you have switched back to Safari at this point.
I switched back to Safari as of, like, I don't know. I don't even remember when it was at this point. I think a few hours ago. Yesterday. Last night. I went to start to open Firefox, and I just said, you know, I'm tired. I don't feel like it. I feel like opening Safari. And, I mean, that kind of did it for me, because it has been at least a couple of weeks now of solid, almost solid Firefox use. And I feel pretty comfortable with it, and everything I said before still applies, that I do like it. But there are a lot of tiny details in the way Safari works that something inside me prefers. So I'm not going to talk about it too much, because it's a very personal decision. Firefox will retain a special place in my heart, along with all its plugins and its wonderful user community, and its wonderful open sourceness. But like the iPhone versus Android, Safari just works out better, and I have to say that is going to remain my primary browser. And Matt's, I think.
Yeah, I've been using Safari for a long time, and I do go into Firefox sometimes and miss some features. I've got Saft and stuff like that, so it really satisfies all my browsing needs between and the wants. Two of them. Yeah, I mean, Sam, I'm primary Firefox user, and at this point, primary Windows user right now. But
Well, actually, that's a really good question. We're both primary Safari users. You're here now, you're Firefox user.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've used Safari.
I have.
What have you kind of noticed in terms
when of... When you use the Mac, rather, do you use Safari, do you use Firefox?
Firefox, generally. Just out of habit.
So is there anything in either browser, you know, in Safari or Firefox that you... Like, is there anything in... What in Firefox do you miss when you use Safari, or have to use Safari, or accidentally use Safari?
Accidentally.
It happens.
I suppose. But, you know, it's everything that makes Firefox Firefox, you know, extensions, all of that.
Well, like what?
You want me to go into all the extensions I use? I mean...
All right. So extensions is really a big thing for you then?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean,
among other things. But.
Okay.
You do use Windows... And have used Windows, not primarily, at points.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go into...
Unfortunately.
To your details. But do you think that has an effect on why you still prefer Firefox? I mean, it's kind of hard to say because it's like, if I was... I don't know.
Yes, because on Windows...
Yeah, on Windows, generally
Safari
Firefox...
is not a very good option.
No.
Neither is Internet Explorer. Okay, so we got to establish our grounds there. If you're on IE, get off it and get something. Get Opera, get Safari, get Firefox. One of the three.
Use a text-based browser. I don't care. Anything is better than Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry
for all those. Sorry for all those Microsoft fanboys out there, but no.
Yeah. So Sydney switched back to Safari. I'm continuing to use Safari.
But absolutely, we encourage you to do your own browser experimentation.
As long as it's not
and let us
Explorer.
Know what you think and why we're wrong. If we're wrong.
We love being wrong. Otherwise, it's like, you know, talking to the air and having the air say, sure. Whatever you say. Whatever you say, theilife.com.
Yeah.
You're always right.
Anyways, though, so, I mean... Let's see, anything cool happened with me this week? I'm on break until Sunday.
That's cool.
So, I have a lot of time to sleep and work on the iLife and hang out
with
people that... Yeah, sleep. Do some more sleeping. And eat turkey.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you guys are all going to be doing.
And all for you guys out there. Also that we can do a better podcast next week.
Yes.
Yes.
Eat that turkey so that you can make a better podcast.
Anyways, I guess that's a pretty weak, cool stuff this week.
Yeah. Let's move to wrapping it up.
Right.
It's getting near 5 o'clock.
You have a few cool tips.
I have a tip. If you're using 2.2 and you are on a different page of applications on the Springboard.
So if you have more than one screen full of a web clip or web
apps or App Store applications or...
Or whatever.
Whatever you might have in there. If you have jailbroken, that could be questionable. You can press the home button once. You know, that square-looking thing. Mm-hmm. And you will be returned to the first page.
Hmm.
So it's cool. You can flick around and then press home, and you'll be brought to the main page.
That is convenient.
Yeah.
You had a second one, too, that you were talking about. Last time I visited this, that you...
Oh, right. We mentioned this before, but if you're streaming a podcast through the iTunes Store, you can press home and it should run in the background, which is something that's new that is added.
That is the iLife.com. Guys, I'm going to just lie down right here. I'm Sydney San Martin. My email address is Sydney, SIDNEY. @theilife.com.
Yep, and I'm Matt, MATT, @theilife.com. It's THEILIFE, no spaces, .com, of course. And Sam?
Sam?
Yeah.
Actually, no. Do I have a female account?
You do. It is Sam at theiwife.com.
Oh, well.
You do now.
Wonderful. No, he's actually had one. Who knew? I'm not making it right now. I promise. But.
Well, who knew?
Okay. Yeah, well, you can I'm check Sam. That one day maybe and see.
Yeah.
You got some secret messages in there.
Yeah. Like secret admirers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyways, Sam. Though, so for Sam. This show, for the week of November 23rd, but not necessarily recorded on November 23rd.
Thanksgiving week 2008.
I'm Matt Dodd, and that's it for this evening. Good night.
Night, everyone.